It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
And then, just to complicate things more, I'm going to talk real slow. Seriously? Do you, like, know when I hit the record button and just... Okay.
Wow.
That's never worked before. I apparently shamed Ezzy into getting off my lap.
Apparently.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast. The only podcast in the world that was on the Zephyr line, the Amtrak line, and got to Chicago and fell asleep before we got there. And so then we went past the last stop, which was like a whole other world that was creepy. And there's a lot of goats. For I don't know why, because it was just creepy. And but then it came back around, and we were back out. Yeah. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 252. And I'm pretty glad that I stayed asleep for that whole thing.
Yeah.
You had to tell me about it later.
Well, I drugged you, so.
You what?
I drugged both of us. But me was on accident, so.
You didn't tell me that. How come you tell me these things on the air when I can't adequately respond?
Because it's hilarious. Oh, man. When Trish was cleaning off that chair, she's like, William hasn't been here in a long time. I'm like, nope. Been a while. For those of you just joining us, I'm going to do this quick. Here's how the show works. We have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. People like yourselves, especially yourselves, write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, little comments, topics, questions, things like that. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. We, its electronic servants, draw the note cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour. That's the show. Tonight, it probably will be very little of the show because we have so much to catch up on.
It's been a while since we were so together, much. And that often means
we've got
a lot to say.
Christmas, we've got New Year's, we've got Star Wars is the big one. I saw like three other movies to actually speak to. I saw more than that, but ones that I give a damn about. There's like three others. And that's probably mostly it. I want to get this out of the way quick because it doesn't really concern you, so I'll do it now. For those of you who live in Iowa City area and are not vegetarians, there is a brand new Vietnamese restaurant called Sun Cafe on First Avenue in Iowa City. You know the giant, ugly building, the ugly red building that has Core Fitness in it on First Avenue? I'm asking you because nobody else is here.
I do, yeah.
Yes. You know the smaller, ugly red building next to it that has like Melio sandwiches and a nail place Froyo place?
I guess.
The end of that now is Sun Cafe, and it's a Vietnamese restaurant. It's been open a month. It is super tasty. It is super... Well, not super, but it's fairly cheap. Really good stuff, but it's already struggling. It's only been open a month, and it's already had to switch from open 6 days to open 7 days.
Mm.
Unfortunately, it's a very limited menu. It's like 13 items. Not a one is vegetarian. Which part of my plan is to cozy up to the owner and then say, you know, Iowa City has a lot of veggie heads. That might help. But went there the other night, had the pho. It was really, really good. Had the banh mi, was unbelievable. I basically just want to eat the banh mi for the rest of my life. So everyone should go there soon and eat there. And even if you don't like it, keep eating there because I like it and I want it to stay open.
Okay.
All right. So how was your Christmas?
Well, let's see. We were able to get back for Christmas. Yay. You know, we didn't have any weather problems.
Yay!
Went down to the farm. That was cool. We had seen Force Awakens before that.
Us too.
And then
we saw it the Friday it opened.
We got home, and my brother, my older brother, had seen it also. Let's see. Right. But my younger brother hadn't seen it. He's not really.
Yeah.
Youngest brother, I should say. He's not really a
He's
fan.
He's like, I don't really care about Star Trek.
Kind of. And my sister hadn't seen it, although I think she wanted to. And we probably talked about it way too much in terms of not giving away spoilers or whatever. But anyway, so my wife and I got home, and we decided that, hey, well, how about, you know, let's see, Christmas was Friday, right?
Yeah.
And we decided, how about Sunday? We drive back to Des Moines and see the movie again and see how many members of our family will come see it.
Yeah.
And we got everyone to come except Dad. He would have come, but he had other things that he was doing on Sunday. But my brother and his wife came. My other brother and his fiance came. My sister came. And my wife's youngest brother came because he happened to be in Des Moines.
Ooh.
So it was really great for us all to be together, to watch it together. And so we did that. New Year's, we were just by ourselves. But that was nice. So, and there's been a lot of Fallout 4 being played. And
yeah, your last comment said 317.
You know, that's like 14 straight days.
Well, but here's
and it's only been out 2 months, right?
Here's the other thing to put it in perspective. That's crazy even for Fallout 4 players, because Ben, one of my gaming group people, has gotten the platinum trophy on it now, which means he's gotten every trophy you can get. Mm-hmm. Only took him about 240.
Yep. Well, we're not even close to getting a platinum trophy.
Have you even, because he had to beat it like 4 times. Have you beaten it at all yet?
No. Okay. Nope. We've barely done even.
I have it on assurance quest from him that it is one of those games that keeps going after it ends.
Oh, it is, yeah.
Because, well, New Vegas was not, and Fallout 3 was not when it first came out. You had one of the DLC change that, so. But it is one of the, like, things happen in the end, so the game changes, of course. But
yeah, well, it's, yeah, that you can, there are things in the game that can, you can, I mean, there's no reason it ever has to end.
Yeah.
And there's no reason for you ever to play the main quest and it never has to end. Yeah. It's like that. So we've been playing a lot of that. But, you know, that's really all there is to talk about. We did see Force Awakens 4 times total.
Four?
Yep.
Wow.
I'm kind of surprised we only saw it that many times.
I do want to interject here to say my major Christmas present was I got a PS4, and I was it was a bundle that came with all the old Uncharted games, so 1, 2, and 3.
Wow.
So I'm excited about that. But then I was given a game, but I was only given one game, and it was Fallout 4. So I've decided, what the hell. I'll play it now. So, but I haven't started yet. Last weekend, I got it, all the patches downloaded and everything, and then the installation, which took forever.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, by the time it was done, I was like, it's too late at night for me to start this game.
Yeah.
And then I haven't touched it. I haven't been trusting myself to start it on a weeknight. I'm like, I'll stay up too late.
Yeah, the installation does take a long time. And honestly, the reason that we've logged so many hours in a game that's not really been out that long is because for the first time ever, as far as I can recall, I mean, we've stayed up till maybe 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning playing a video game.
Yeah.
4 or 5 in the morning.
Nice.
Playing this video game. Which is fun in a way, but the next day, yeah, boy, no, do you ever pay for it? And then if it's over the weekend, which it mostly has been,
yeah,
the next week is for, I mean, it didn't used to be like this. When I was younger, we could pull a stunt like this and the next week would be nothing. But now you pay for it the whole next week.
Oh, yeah, story of my life. Yeah, no, I do that every week. I pay for it all the time.
But anyway, that, I don't really have anything else to talk about.
But no, I wanted to interject about that before saying we should probably talk about Star Wars because I think that's the big one here.
Okay.
So you saw it 4 times. Mm. I'm assuming that means you liked it.
It's complicated. I'll say this. If I was going to give the film a letter grade, and I think my wife would even agree on this, I would give it a solid C.
Wow.
And it wasn't as good I would give like Empire Strikes Back a solid B at least. But we have seen it four times.
Yes, you have.
Enthusiastically, and we could easily have seen it more times than that. So what that means is, in spite of the fact that on a broader, in a broader sense, the film is, I mean, it's a Star Wars film.
Yes.
And it's not high art or anything.
No.
There are a lot of criticisms out there about it that we basically agree with from, you know, from a perspective of story and all this other stuff. Obviously, and you can have this experience with films that are, you know, to say it's a solid C, that just means, it doesn't mean it's bad. It just means it's not like great or necessarily good. But with a film like that, you can still have a really positive experience with it if there's something about it that resonates with you personally.
Yeah.
And that happens to be the case. There are things about it that resonate very strongly with my, I mean, way extremely strongly with my wife. This is probably, she would probably say this is the most positive movie experience she's had probably in her whole life. And there are
full disclosure before then, I think it was Signs. So.
There are things that resonate with me personally, and there are things that resonate with us both sort of together. Yeah. So it's a film, and we've enjoyed it more each time we've seen it, but it's complicated because if we sit down with someone and they kind of start talking about the movie and all they have to say is bad things about it, we're both like, oh yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Well, I mean,
but then they're really baffled when we say we've seen it four times and we love the experience. Well, it's a very personal thing.
Yeah, and this is all going to be spoiler free, guys. We already discussed that was the case, but I don't think it's remotely spoiling to say. I think a lot of the stuff that works for you is representational. They do really pretty well with sexual representation and racial representation.
That's my observation.
It's a very diverse cast, and there's not a lot of, well, for starters, there's not a lot of the usual stereotypes that you see in the other Star Wars movies.
No. If we're going to be allowed to talk about that aspect of it, I am so impressed with the representation.
I consider it spoiler-free because I can't imagine somebody saying, God damn it, I wish somebody hadn't told me beforehand about all the great racial diversity in it.
It's so significant to me, and that I'm a little disappointed that it's not getting more attention than it's getting. And I realize there are a lot of things I'm not seeing. But even in the last couple of days, I've worked a little harder to find stuff. I have found some stuff I didn't see before, but it's still not nearly enough.
It's a hegemonic thing. People don't notice it when it's bad, so they don't particularly notice it when it's good either.
Well, and there are some issues of representation that are being noticed, but other parts that aren't.
Yeah.
And what impresses me is somewhere someone read, or I didn't read it, but someone read it and told me about it, that Abrams actually had a moment in the early casting of the film where he realized, I mean, he had a sort of an epiphany about this. He realized, you know what, we could cast this however we want. Why are we doing it like this? Why don't we do it like this?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if he got part of this from Geena Davis, because Geena Davis has sort of famously described two steps in making movies less sexist. And the first one is, and she encourages people, part of this plan is to look at projects you're already working on.
Mm.
It's not just about projects you're going to work on. Look at the projects you've already got that you're in pre-production and you're about to cast. And there's two things you can do. One, you can just randomly pick characters and change their gender or race in order to make it more representative, because most characters are not going to be, it's not going to be so important whether or not they're male or female or black or white or
whatever.
I've
been known to do that in role-playing games.
And the second thing you can do is make it explicit in your scripts where there are crowd scenes to insist that half the people, at least, you know, half the people are women or whatever. I don't know if J.J. Abrams heard that or saw that or whatever, but that's certainly, both of those things were done for this film.
Mm.
And it's the first film I've ever seen where I felt like they could have done that where they did. I mean, there are some films, like if you do certain period pieces or you know, it's about Civil War South or something, you know, that your gender and race makeup is going to be. But
when gender and race are a major part
sure.
of the story.
But in a movie such as a fantasy film or a movie like this where there's absolutely no reason.
Like this? You mean a fantasy film?
Yeah, like Star Wars. There's absolutely no reason not to have a proportional representation. This is the first time I've seen a film where they could definitely do that, where they did, like everywhere. Mm. Like scene for scene, every single place. Like there wasn't one time, and I do this all the time with movies where, you know, there's a character that's a male character or perhaps a white character, and I'm thinking to myself, here, there was a perfect example where they could just easily made that a woman or a person of color or a woman of color, and they didn't. It didn't happen during this movie, not one time, because they did it. Mm. And to me, that is so huge. And there are a few people talking about it, but not as many people. And, you know, I was critical of Anita Sarkeesian had a review of it that I was critical of because she mentioned some representational things, but not very much. And she talks about certain characters, but she does it very briefly. And you don't notice it so much in the blog, but the blog is basically a transcript of the video. When you watch the video, she gives a nod to certain characters, but she's almost in a dismissive way because she wants to get right to the part where she's going to talk about how stupid Star Wars is and how glad she never got sucked into that franchise.
I always have issues with Sarkeesian, and I give her this credit. I feel like she's tackling stuff other people aren't, and she's putting herself out there, and somebody needs to do that, and that's awesome.
Well, right.
But beyond that, I feel like she just constantly has such a chip on her shoulder, and she's just so, like...
Yeah, I don't know.
I feel like she's judging the viewer in her videos.
Well, maybe. I don't know about
any
of that.
Something about the attitude has just always... And she gets really focused on the stuff that seems to just, like, annoy her.
Well, another thing is, I didn't object to anything she had to say.
No, and this is across the board. This is with Sarkeesian in general.
Everything she said...
I'm not saying how she is about Star Wars.
Yeah, everything she said in the video I agree with. But it's like, couldn't you have dedicated more time to this cool... I can't recall off the top of my head, but it doesn't seem like she said anything about how well gender and race were represented in the crowd.
She's not super big on... telling you about the positive stuff.
Well, I mean, she can be pretty thorough. I mean, and I'm thinking of, like, when she talks about Hunger Games, for example, she doesn't talk about how implausible this and that. I mean, there's a lot of problems with the Hunger Games that she just totally glosses over to celebrate, you know, Katniss and all this other stuff.
Probably because she likes the Hunger
Games. Well, and she, and it's clear that she does. Yeah. But in this case, you know, instead of just dedicating a brief character to, a brief paragraph to one of the characters and then complaining about Star Wars the rest of the time, she could have dedicated a brief paragraph to how much she's not really into Star Wars and then dedicated the whole rest of the thing to all of the cool things that this movie happened to do about representation.
But she likes not being into Star Wars more than she likes that character.
That's the impression I got.
No, I think that's her thing. I think she's a very strong feminist, so her message is always very strongly feminist. But she has very, very personal agendas in her critiques of things.
Well, and so I was a little disappointed in that. I'm not trying to bash her or anything. I'm just saying this is an example of a feminist response I saw. It's not the only one I saw where, yes, some things about representation were talked about and celebrated, but it seemed like there was a whole bunch of other things that weren't talked about. And I don't know. To me, it's a huge deal. To me, it was so thoroughly representational, and it's in a not just a big budget box office action movie, but probably the big budget. I mean,
it's probably going to be the highest grossing of all time.
Me, that's a big, and it's a big deal that J.J. Abrams came out and said, "I had this epiphany, and I did this on purpose." You know, I think that's. I don't know. To me, that's really significant. And there are some people who are saying it, but not as many people as I would like. But then again, I have to admit, I mean, there's a lot of stuff I could just be missing. But one of the things that really gets me and that I love so much is the experience that my wife had watching the movie. I mean, the reason she had such an overwhelming experience and loves the movie so much is because of a representational issue. Okay. And,
well, again, I mean, assuming you've ever seen a trailer, I don't think it's a spoiler to say that sort of the hero of this one is a woman.
Yeah.
And a pretty awesome woman. And that's, I found that just cool and refreshing right out of the gate. That was fun.
Well, and the way she's a hero too. Cause you see a lot of female heroes. But you know, they're, for me and for my wife, there's always been something there that's like, oh, well, it's too bad they did that. You know?
Yeah, yeah, no, and we didn't have...
And there didn't seem to be anything like that, at least not for my wife. Now, that said, when it comes to female representation in particular, this is why when you and I talk about this, I always say, I don't want any of the stories that are out there to go away.
No, we just want more diversity of stories.
That's right, yeah, which absolutely means that some women are going to watch this film and not relate to this female absolutely character, and that's fine. But my wife rarely sees a female character, whether the star of the show or heroic or what have you, that she relates to. And this one she related to so strongly that all of the other problems with the film just melted away, and she just loved watching this film, and I loved watching it with her. So that was the a really important part of it for her. And there were a lot more subtle things that I won't get into because of spoilers or whatever, What I was going to say earlier was, it's so wonderful to read some of the articles you find out there about it are other women, adult women who had a similar experience to my wife, and how wonderful and moved they were by the film. And more than that, are the women talking about taking their daughters to it. And watching their daughters respond to this movie like they've never seen them respond to any other movie ever, not any Disney movie, not any other. And it's like, I mean, I was reading some of this stuff with tears in my eyes. It was so awesome. And that's what I mean by, to me, it's like, I don't know. Maybe some people are disappointed that this huge thing is happening with a Star Wars movie. You know, I mean, why is it happening with such a banal franchise or whatever? And I get that if you've got
it. But it is pretty awesome because it's also a franchise that's made a lot of those mistakes in the past.
Well, yeah, that's true.
So it's really nice to see them proving that you can do it the other way.
Well, and I want to say, and again, I won't be specific, but this isn't just about female representation and the representation of people of color. The representation of men was kind of... There were two key places in the film that I thought they really did something that I thought was a little different or bold for a film of this type.
There is definitely a certain relationship that is particularly refreshing and unusual.
Well, that's what I think.
In this, so do a lot of people. That one's getting more commentary.
Oh, well, that's good because I haven't seen anyone else talk about it.
It's part of it is because. A lot of people have latched onto it, and it's going crazy in fan fiction.
Oh.
Okay. Which is maybe not so positive, but people have talked about how, like, sort of refreshing that is.
Well, there are two particular relations I'm thinking of, but I won't talk about them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I want to say that I thought it was great to see Carrie Fisher in this film. I thought Leia's character was awesome.
Did good. I would have liked to see more, maybe.
I would too.
But yeah, she did a great job.
But some people have mentioned, and I agree, that the representation, the cool positive representation of this movie even includes people of advanced age, really.
That is true.
And that's cool.
Yep.
And that's kind of the thing that has made my wife and I love it more and more with each viewing, is even seeing things we didn't notice before.
Yeah.
And it's like, I realize there's a lot of problems with the movie. I realize that this, as films go, this is not the best Star Wars movie. It's not the best movie ever made. Like I said, I would probably, as films go, I would give it a C. But the representation...
As cultural object.
Yeah. And as something that has the potential to maybe... make a huge cultural impact, both for viewers, for young girls, for and for how movies are made. I mean, I just can't help but be really super excited about it. And but I do understand people who might not like it and people who might not find characters in it who they relate to. I get it. Mm-hmm. But man, in our household, it's been a real positive thing overall. Except, of course, we wanted to rush out and get action figures and stuff, and we couldn't find the certain action figures we wanted.
Yeah.
Thanks, Hasbro and Disney.
Well, they make them. They'll just...
Not the ones we wanted, they don't.
I wonder what you wanted then.
Ooh. Well, figures of a certain size.
Oh, okay, okay. I don't know anything about that.
So. Yeah, there were mostly the figures that you find out there from Hasbro from any property are gonna. You're gonna have 3 3/4 inch figures. You might find some 6 inch figures, and you'll also find 12 inch figures.
Okay.
And the big controversy right now is people are realizing that. Not all of the characters they want to see in... There's a 7-pack of figures you can get.
Okay.
7-pack of 12-inch figures.
Okay.
You can get, and they're not finding all the characters they want in there. Well, it's not just that that character isn't available in the 7-pack. That character is not available in the 12-inch size.
Okay, unless this is somebody that it's a surprise... That's from before, that it's a surprise they're in this movie, I think you can say a character name and it's not a spoiler.
Okay, well... Well, anyway, female characters. There are no female characters in the 7-pack at all.
The 7-pack doesn't have Rey. Rey is the main character of the movie.
Right. Or even Phasma. It's
Phasma, you could make an argument for. Even Leia, you could make an argument. They'd be weak. I mean, they should be there. But Rey is inexcusable. That's literally the main character of the movie.
Okay, she's not in this 7-pack of 12-inch figures. They don't make a 12-inch figure.
She's the main character.
For her.
She's straight up the... It's a story about her. That's ridiculous.
I know.
That's more ridiculous than the Black Widow thing. And as we all know, the Black Widow thing makes us all want to punch millions of people
in the throat. Well, that's not the only thing. There was a play set... With a Millennium Falcon playset.
Mm-hmm.
With a Millennium Falcon large enough, you can put figures in it.
Yeah.
Sold with some figures, not including her.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know,
no,
it's...
that's insane.
So that sparked a hashtag Where's Rey campaign and everything like that. You know, we saw Rey figures that were 3 3/4 inches
six
inches,
good, yeah.
But that's not what... That's not what my wife
you
wanted.
You want to display. You don't want to play with them.
She wanted a 12-inch figure that she could, like, put on her desk at work
or
something. And there just weren't any.
Yeah.
There might be. I don't... You must... Maybe you didn't hear. Also, there's a Star Wars Monopoly game that features some of characters from the new film, not including Rey.
Well, in that case, I just think she's lucky. Because
well,
it sucks to be in a
theme
Monopoly game.
Hasbro released a statement about that.
What did they say?
Out
of curiosity.
They said...
This will be fun. I've heard great ones for other instances of this. What is this?
They said that many of this product, and I presume many others, they have the same excuse. This product was released like in September or something like that. And they couldn't put Rey in it because doing so would be a spoiler for the movie somehow. Idea why. I mean, Finn is in the set. I don't know.
I don't know. This is the same. Disney freaked out when somebody bought a reaction figure and put a picture of it up online. They claimed there was a spoiler in it. I looked at it because I didn't care and couldn't find anything. Maybe that's it now. Maybe it's the same fucking argument.
Don't know. But that
spoiler alert, a person named Rey is in this movie.
Well,
it's a woman.
Yeah, I mean, Hasbro's basic approach to this is that they didn't really throw Disney under the bus, like say, well, Disney wouldn't let us because of this. But that was kind of the implication that their hands were tied because certain concern, I don't know who, didn't want them to release spoilers of the movie by having Rey included in some of this stuff. But I don't get it because, I'm looking at Rey, the smaller Rey action figures, and there's nothing about them. There's only one figure I've seen that had an accessory with it that could be a little spoilery, but most of them don't have that.
Yeah.
So I don't know what they're talking about. But yeah, so, you know.
But no, you've done it like five times.
I'm just saying it's complicated.
He really enjoyed the diverse representation. His wife really associated with it, and they loved it because of that. But he totally agrees with other people that had the problems with parts of it, and he knows there's problems, and he knows it's pretty middle of the road as far as a film. Literally, see, we wonder why you can't narrow it down to a good, like, 10 minutes. It's because you say the same thing, like, five times.
I know. I often forget what I just said.
Well, and it's one thing when we're arguing and you're like, that's not what I meant, and you change it slightly. But this time, you're just monologuing.
I know, but see, you know, nobody likes to listen. I don't like to listen to myself, so I often forget what I just said.
Five times.
I know. I'm getting old.
We're going to get monitors with like, a 10-second playback.
And I'm getting old.
In your headset. We're all getting old. So, would you care to know what I thought of the movie?
Yes, please.
All right. I thought it was okay. I liked it fine. And it was really neat to be in the theater. I had it happen a couple times of being like, this is new Star Wars. And I am in the theater opening week seeing it. Like, that was just kind of cool. I think it's totally going to fit fine with the rest of them. I don't think it stands out as worse or better, especially. Although the stuff you've talked about is there. And there's a lot of stuff that I, perhaps inaccurately, attribute to not having Lucas involved. The script was, like, the dialogue was amazing. People talked like people. Conversations sounded normal.
Well, and the
jokes were funny,
and the acting was really good.
Yeah, and there are a lot more jokes in this than the other ones on purpose, and they're pretty funny.
Yeah, yeah.
Han Solo gets all the best lines. Jesus Christ, we were quoting him just nonstop. There's an issue. The reason I sort of say mediocre, and this may be me getting old, because I think it could probably apply to other ones. I think I'm at the point now where it's harder for me to suspend disbelief about the fact that pretty much every aspect of the plot and the story is stupid as hell. Just everything. Every bit. I was like, that doesn't make sense. That's dumb. Why would that have happened? No, that's stupid.
There's one thing that happens in the film that I think is the worst thing they've ever done in a Star Wars film, and probably the worst thing I've ever seen.
That's why I know it's remotely because some of the stupid film. Stuff they did is stupid stuff they did in the earlier one. Not the biggest. The biggest that always bugs me is when you're jumping trilogies. Anywhere between 17 and 30 years pass, and whatever happened before is just fucking legend that's barely whispered about. Nobody's sure it's true.
Well,
it's like if we're sitting here going, did Andy Warhol really exist? I mean, come on.
That's somewhat true. I mean,
there's an apologist way of going, oh, they're across the galaxy and blah, 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 blah. The other thing you should be prepared for in general is it's episode 4. It's the same goddamn story.
I'm surprised you're going to say that.
To the degree... Yeah, to the degree that there are actual in-jokes about that fact.
No, that's right, that's right.
But it's so episode 4.
A fact that I did not like at all.
That's just weird. And actually, other people have made the arguments that just about every Star Wars movie is episode 4. But this one was just really...
More to the point, J.J. Abrams' reboot of Star Trek was episode 4.
And some of it, in this case, is they really wanted to... push on your nostalgia. They really wanted to remind you of the original trilogy.
Which, again, I didn't really like that.
No, but I think is key to it. I think from a business standpoint, that was a good idea.
So you think that accounts a little bit for its success?
Yeah, absolutely.
Huh.
Because there was so much backlash from the prequels.
Right, but
I'm not saying they didn't go too far, but I'm saying I understand why they did it, and it probably will help the cause, although clearly it's whatever's happening is happening.
So the people who were annoyed by it are in the minority, you think? I wouldn't be surprised if that's true, I'm asking.
I don't know.
Because I was pretty annoyed.
I just thought it was funny. I'm like, why would you do this?
I found it extremely annoying.
Because it's the same damn thing. Yeah, no. And then there's a lot of other things that annoy me. that I can't speak to because spoilers. But it was a fun time. I laughed a lot. The action, there's lots of action. It's very exciting. The characters are cool. The characters are not one-dimensional.
I mean, to
be fair, I don't know that they're three-dimensional, but they're not one-dimensional.
A lot of people are I've heard people say that some characters are flat, and I'm like, I might personally have thinking, no, I don't think that at all. But
here's the deal.
Some people think that.
Compared to every character in every other Star Wars movie, these characters are, I don't even know what a good example is, but these are the most nuanced, fleshed out characters in the history.
I thought
of the
acting was really good.
The acting was really good.
To me, character for character, there was a lot of subtlety. I mean, for a film that's so fast paced, that makes it impossible for you to really get to know these characters deeply.
Yes.
There were scenes where the subtlety, and I got to give Abrams some credit too. There were some scenes where he really let the camera linger in just the right moments, and the actors used it to just the right effect, and you're like, wow, that's really good what they're doing there in a Star Wars film. I mean, the drama was really quite good.
And I got to give credit to the direction, too. I mean, there was... Because given the level of action, it can get really tricky to do the dialogue right in the midst of
and
that.
And the pacing.
It really did. Exactly. Yes. That's what I was going to say, and then I thought I should just say direction. But yes, the pacing was really nice. Except the very last scene where a helicopter flew around for 4 minutes while no one did anything.
Yeah, that was a little weird.
Also, just so you know, there is no sort of shawarma or anything like that. So once the credits start, you can totally leave.
Yeah.
And you should, because usually there's people waiting outside to come in. So it's fun. Totally. Definitely go see it. I mean, I'm assuming everybody, just about everybody's fucking seen it already. I'm kind of amazed when people haven't. And it was good, and I mean, I'll see the next one. Trish was annoyed in that it is very clearly the first part of a trilogy, which we all knew, but, like, it doesn't feel kind of like a full story in that way. It seemed kind of abrupt.
Yeah,
And she didn't like that, especially because it's going to be, like, 2 or 3 years before
we
do the next
one. You don't really want your first act to feel like a first act.
Exactly.
And it really did.
Exactly.
And it really did.
And, yeah, and then there's a lot of very specific things that piss me off that I can't talk about here. I will say, a lot of celebrities played stormtroopers. Celebrities not associated with the movie.
I've heard that,
And one in particular, stormtrooper that got an interesting and kind of funny thing, is Daniel Craig.
That's what I've heard, yeah.
Which was really shocking to me. And then the other thing that I already bitched to you about is the actor who plays the character of Finn in this is a British actor.
Yeah. I didn't know that
until
you told me.
People in this movie have British accents on both the good guys and the bad guys have British accents. For some reason, they had him do an American accent. He does it great, but I'm like, what was the point of that? It's very weird.
My brother has heard people say, oh, it's because he's Lando Calrissian's son.
That went around for a long time because he's like, we're the only two black people in all of Star Wars.
Lando didn't speak with a British accent.
Yeah, but now it's no longer true because there's other black people in this movie. So,
well, yeah, but I mean, it was a joke.
But people were theorizing that ever since the casting because they're like, he must be because literally the galaxy has two black dudes. So,
well,
clearly
they gave him a American accent,
but he definitely didn't have a Billy Dee Williams accent. So that's not good.
A Billy Dee Williams.
Yeah, man, that's his own special accent.
Work on that. We need you to work on that.
The Force is a beautiful thing. I can't tell if that was racist or just a really shitty Billy Dee Williams accent. I think I was doing an impression of one of the Wayans brothers doing an impression of Billy Dee Williams is what that was, actually. Christmas. Oh, damn it, there's a big story I want to tell you about. You would really appreciate this. Did I tell you about Rip's Chicken before we left?
Well, you mentioned it, yeah.
Yeah, I told you what the place is like. And it burned down all the chicken grease. And there is no real menu. It's just you can get a light quarter chicken with fries or a dark quarter chicken with fries.
I think so.
Nowadays you can get chicken strips with fries, but that's it.
Okay.
Well, we went there. That was fun. The chicken was ridiculous.
What does that mean? ridiculous.
So.
Oh, it's good.
Good, but also just insanely greasy.
Oh, okay.
Like just loaded, like just covered in batter and greasy and crispy and tasty. And you do love it, and then afterwards you hate yourself.
Oh,
like
God.
So much. And if you eat too much, you'll get sick. But so, yeah, that was Christmas. I got other cool stuff, but the PS4 was the big gift, you know? And New Year's, I drank to excess, and now I don't want to do that again for another year. Because it was pretty crazy. My coworker, Coffee, and her wife came, and they seemed to have a really good time, which is awesome, and everybody liked them. And so that's cool.
Yeah.
We watched Dracula Untold. And it's a bad movie.
Well, that's the tradition, right?
Yep. It was pretty atrocious. But it was fun atrocious, so that's fine. There's not even much to say about it. I mean, at the time, it's kind of hilarious, but there's not a lot that, like, you can reiterate later that sounds exciting. We played a really fun game Trish had gotten off of Kickstarter called The Contender that's basically Cards Against Humanity, but with actual political quotes from presidents and presidential candidates.
Hmm.
And so that was kind of fun. And actually, I got for Christmas a game called Coup, C-O-U-P. Like a political coup.
Right.
That's a really short game, and it's really fun. It's supposed to be the sci-fi dystopian thing, and it's a bluffing game, but it's basically there are different character cards, and everybody has two of them in front of them face down, and those are your secret influence. And so you do things with them, but they can't see them, so you can lie about what you have, and then people can challenge, potentially. But, you know, you'll lose influence if you're wrong or whatever. And other people can counter, but they could also be lying. And it's really short. It says it's like a 15-minute game, which I could see that. But that was kind of fun, so I'm hoping to play more of that. That was New Year's. What other movies have I seen? Oh, the big one. I had been meaning to for a really long time see this. And then we finally got around to it. We watched Behind the Candelabra. The HBO-made Liberace biopic with Michael Douglas as Liberace and Matt Damon as his lover, Scott Thorson.
Okay.
It is amazing. But not in a useful way. It's trashy as hell. It looks like one of your trashier 80s biopics. It's just so much people throwing wine glasses into walls and people getting mad because they think other people are fucking other people, and the 70s fashions are just amazing. And of course, Liberace 70s fashions, so they're just amazing. The hair, the cameos. Scott Bakula has a mullet and a full-on 70s porn stash. Dan Aykroyd is his manager and has the big honkin' like Kissinger glasses and stuff. Rob Lowe as the coolest 70s plastic surgeon ever with the bleached blonde hair and the face that just doesn't move. it was perfect. It's just silly, trashy fun, and I highly recommend it to anybody who thinks that would be fun. So not you.
Yeah, probably not.
And then I saw a couple of slightly unusual comedies that have recently been out. Because other than Star Wars, there wasn't really much that we wanted to see in the theater. There was one other thing, so we went and saw Sisters, which is the one that Tina Fey and Amy Poehler just
mm-hmm.
did.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty good. It's so every generation we have our little party movies that are about young people usually throwing parties in somebody's house, and it gets really crazy and it's wild and things get broken and they might get in trouble, but at the last second they're saved somehow, and usually at least one of them falls in love and everybody learns really shallow life lessons.
Okay.
At least happen in every generation. And people our age, it was mostly in like the 80s and 90s that these movies came out. This is one of those movies, but it's set now and it's about people our age, like trying to sort of recapture that time period and how well it doesn't work. So it's incredibly formulaic. It's incredibly stereotypical. It's incredibly predictable. But it's funny as hell. It's really, and it's Tina Fey and Amy Poehler, which means regardless, it's funny as hell. Mm-hmm. They are amazing. They look nothing alike, you may note. You totally buy them as sisters just because they know each other and interact so well. So it's one of those movies. If you never see it, that's fine. If you go and see it, you will laugh your ass off, and then you don't ever have to see it again. That's fine. But and cameos of everybody from Saturday Night Live in it is amazing. So that was fun. And then I had been really curious about this, and we finally saw it last night. We saw Trainwreck, the Amy Schumer romantic comedy.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty good. It still is too much of an actual romantic comedy for me. And it had a fair bit of the stuff I don't like about Amy Schumer's comedy. I feel like Amy Schumer has some very broad, sort of silly, vulgar stuff that she does. But and then she does that, and she's aware she does that, and she's aware that it is broad and vulgar, and then she can surprise you. She can, you know, subvert it somehow or bring up something. I mean, she's very much a feminist, and that's what she does. She does this stuff, and then she sort of points at you and says, "You get that's what I'm doing, right?" And I like that part. This had a little too much of the former, but it's still fun. It also had a lot of good cameos, including Tilda Swinton in a role that was so un-Tilda Swinton-like that Trish said, "That's not her." And then, like, 10 minutes later, she's like, "Oh, my God, that might be her." And then 5 minutes later, she's like, "I looked it up. It's her." And Bill Hader stole that movie. I think I really like Bill Hader. I think he just cracks me up.
I'm not sure who that is.
He was on Saturday Night Live forever. He has a very bony looking face, like he's very skinny.
Okay.
He's most famous, I think, on there for a character of Stefan. He also did a really good Vincent Price impression periodically.
Don't know.
He voiced the main character in the Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs movies. He actually helped with another guy make the voice of BB-8 in Star Wars.
Mm.
That's actually another Star Wars complaint. But it's a general Star Wars complaint. Your galactic civilization, you have invented a common trade language. Galactic Basic, I believe. Now, there is a little trick that there's some debate over whether or not that's in the canon or in the expanded universe, but I feel like it's in the canon. So, first of all, why the hell do you need protocol droids? But the bigger one is, why the hell do you make your droids talk in bloops and bleeps that people don't understand? We have speak and spell technology now. Why would R2-D2 and BB-8 not just come out and say, "I need to go fix..." Like, why would it be boop, 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 that nobody gets? That's insane. That's not right.
Well, and even more insane is some people get it.
Well, that's a whole other thing that I think it's no a little spoilery. But that was one of the things that pissed me off about...
Well, I'm talking about like Luke Skywalker even. I mean...
Does he ever, though? I always thought he only actually talked to him when he was in his ship and
it was showing up on the screen. Yeah. There is a little bit of that in Empire, but there's plenty of times where that's not the case. And,
yeah.
And like in Dagobah, he says, "Well, if you're saying this, then I agree." Like, he doesn't understand what he's saying.
Yeah.
But then later, it's clear they're having something of a conversation, and he's not in the ship. So, but he's not the only one, and it happens in all through Star Wars.
But so, it was interesting to see... both of those last two comedies had John Cena in interesting roles that make me think he's pretty good in a comedy position. And swole as hell. You get to see pretty much all of naked John Cena in Trainwreck. Like, everything except the thing. That man is big. Like, his legs are freakishly huge. I think that's all I got to say about that. I finished Assassin's Creed Rogue, obviously, since I'm going to start Final Fantasy. Fallout 4.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty good. I enjoyed that. Although by the end I was ready to be done, which is usually what happens with Assassin's Creed games. I think that's it. So draw something out of the hat, because we only got like 10 minutes left.
Let's see. Coffee.
Wants
to know. How and what... excuse me. How and what... do you do to temper your own dissonance, if any, when witnessing poverty and struggle when traveling?
Well, you don't travel, so I don't know.
Well, sure I do.
All right. Well, what do you do?
I mean, you know, I don't travel very much outside the United States, but what do? I don't do anything.
I was going to say, I don't think you temper your dissonance.
No, I don't do anything.
You just feel sad.
I feel very sad.
Yes.
Maybe I don't understand the question, though.
It works better for me. I go on a cruise to Mexico. I eat at cool restaurants. I go to these cool things. And meanwhile, I see people all over the place that are just in abject poverty. So how do I do that and still, like, go do all these fun things and not just, like, stab myself in the face?
Well, because seeing these people is going to...
Well, because there's this immediate reaction of, why the fuck do I get to go hang out at this restaurant or see this show when the money I spent on that could, you know, feed these people for a year?
I see.
Why do I get to have this vacation at all, let alone, you know, those things when this is going on?
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is a thing, because there's always the bigger issue, but then there's literally the, you're splurging on something or you're having some sort of luxury and there's people there who don't have their basic needs. How do you internally justify still having that luxury rather than taking that money or whatever it is and handing it to those people?
Hmm.
So it probably comes up less for you because you live fairly modestly anyway.
That's true.
But in a comparative sense, I mean, you know, you could ask in a larger sense, you know, how do you buy video game consoles instead of donating that money to the homeless?
That's a very good question.
Well, so therein lies the dissonance she's talking about, and how do you temper that?
Yeah, I don't.
Perhaps a more plain way to put it, how do you live with yourself, man?
I don't know. I guess in a lot of ways I don't very well. I do spend a lot of time wondering how well I'm taking the privileges I've been given and parlaying them into something that'll help people who are not as privileged as I am. I mean, and this is something that I've been aware of my whole life. I mean, this was something we were taught as I was growing up. I mean, even though we weren't wealthy by really any measure, unless you're comparing us to, like, you know, people in the United States who are below the poverty line or people in other countries that are experiencing abject poverty. I mean, we didn't have a lot of...
You had heating and you had enough food to eat.
Yes, exactly. And sometimes we didn't get much for Christmas. Sometimes it was bad enough where we had to be careful with how much we were eating. But, I mean, compared to some people, that's nothing. But even in that context, we were kind of taught this and we, I guess, believed it, that we were very lucky, very fortunate, very blessed. And, of course, as I got older, I realized how much more true that was than I even realized, given our socioeconomic status, given our race, given my gender. So I've always felt like I was coming from a place of privilege. And as I've grown older, I've only felt more strongly that way. So I've always been pretty, you know, I do look around my house and I think, wow, you know, we've got a pretty big TV. We've got a video, the latest video game console.
We've got a 12-inch action figure.
Yeah, we've got all.
In case you don't, but
yeah, you know, we've got all this stuff, and you know, how much are we turning our privilege into
and
something
then
that helps
get
other
all
people?
Schindler's Listy audit. This TV could have paid
it's not just money. It's not just giving money to a charity. I mean, there's time. There's also where we. How we direct our political activity.
Yep.
and so on. And I suppose...
I suspect in a lot of those you have less dissonance, but...
Well, what I'm saying is there are things we do that I can always look at and say, well, okay, well, we're doing that, and I guess good.
Yeah, yeah.
I never feel like we're doing enough, mm. And so I suppose I don't feel like I really temper any kind of dissonance unless it's to actually do something that I think is going to help other people. I mean, I suppose someone could say that I'm doing that to temper the dissonance.
I see.
I like to think I'm doing it because it's the right thing, not just to make myself feel better because I feel guilty for being a white guy or something.
Weirdly,
but
I think this might be the one aspect that I think I might manage better than you. I feel like, well, okay, here's the first thing. The way I temper it is two ways. Well, one, through severe depression. When I really stop and think about it, I'm like, wow, this sucks.
Yeah, I get
I'm kind
very,
of a bad person.
That's true.
And then the rest of the time is just convenient. I don't even want to say denial, but just I don't think about it. I just don't pay attention and move on. Just so it's essentially denial. I just deny, and then I go and enjoy myself. And that's where I spend most of the time, is just that. If I don't think about it, I'm not sad. And then when I think about it, I'm like, oh, and then I don't think about it, and I'm fine.
That's kind of amazing.
And horrific at the same time. Because I can just be like, no, I'm just going to pretend I don't. I'm just going to not think about those poor people.
Can you do that? I super can. Wow, that's amazing.
Not that I like forget, but it's just like not on my mind because I'm having fun playing with my big TV and my video games or you know whatever else. But here's the interesting thing that I was just thinking about, and I find it interesting because apparently you're not this way. Because I do things, I do good things.
Sure.
I do good things on a personal level. I do charitable things sometimes. I'm much more likely to give money than to do, you know, anything else. And I feel like at least in my conscious brain, I don't relate those to how I'm failing otherwise. Like, I feel good about the good things, but I don't, like, use that to feel less guilty about the stuff I'm not doing. I still hate that part. At no point do I think that I use the good I do to justify the bad I do or the good I don't do.
Right.
Well, you seem to imply that you, when you're feeling bad about what you're not, you're like, well, I'm doing this, so that's
well, no, I don't think that's what's happening. I mean, I can imagine someone thinking that's what's happening.
Oh, okay, I thought that's what you were saying.
No, well,
you make yourself feel better by.
Well, I'm saying someone. I really meant to say that a person might perceive that that's how I'm tempering my bad feeling by doing this. In fact, I've had people say that to me. It's like, you're only doing this because you feel guilty because you're a white person, or you're guilty because you're a man.
Buddhism's obsessed with that idea. There is no such thing as a truly charitable act.
But I don't, when I'm doing it, I don't feel like that. I feel like I'm doing
either.
It because, oh, this needs to be done. I don't, and the fact of the matter is, I don't feel better. You know what I'm saying? It's like,
oh no, see, when I do the good stuff, I feel like a fucking rock star. I'm the greatest guy on the planet.
No, I don't.
But that's the thing. I have no in between. There's no struggle. It's either I'm the greatest guy on the planet, or I'm a big fucking asshole, or I'm just not thinking about society, basically.
Well, for me, if I do something, it's because it's in that moment, I feel like, okay, this needs to be done.
It's a tasty way to do it.
I don't think I'm tempering some kind of white male guilt or something. It's got to be done, so I'm going to do it.
Mm.
And I think evidence that I'm not doing it in response to white male guilt is because I think I do feel a little of that guilt, and it does not go away.
And he's not white and male. Did you guys, those of you who have not met him, he's a black woman. I say he, but...
But you see what I'm saying.
Should it.
Again, I mean, my whole life, I have...
It shouldn't ever be a scorecard, for one thing.
Right, exactly. That's exactly right. That's another thing is, when I do something like this, To me, it's not something morally laudable. I don't know if I'd say it's morally obligatory either, but I feel like it is. Like... When I do it, I feel like I should have done this yesterday kind of thing.
Moral imperative.
Yeah, it's not... I don't feel like I should get a medal for it or something.
I do. I'm awesome when I do good stuff.
No, I just want to do it, and I do it, and that's it.
I think as I get older, I do fewer good things so I can feel more excited about those.
No,
less often.
I just... What it comes down to is most of the time when I do something, it's something that I wish more people would do, and that I think if more people did it, it would make a real impact, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And while at the same time, I don't judge other people for whether or not they do it. It's just, this is how I'm deciding this should be done.
Yeah.
And so I do it, and then that's it. It doesn't make me feel like a good person or a better person or a less culpable person as far as what I may or may not be contributing to how bad things are.
So William tempers the dissonance with just constant self-hate and depression.
Well,
I temper the dissonance with bouts of self-hate and depression followed by blouts of just obliviousness. And the obliviousness is much longer.
I try to avoid the self-hate and depression too, but that does happen.
How's that working out for you?
Not very well.
No.
But sometimes, I mean, I'm not a sad sack.
We're specifying this for the people who have just started listening today, because the rest of you already know.
I'm not a sad sack all the time.
No. But I feel like that's because you put on a good face.
Well, maybe. I just want to make the world... I want to leave the world better...
Teach the world to sing in
person. No, I want to leave the world better than I found it, in whatever way I can. And, yep. and even if I can't do that, I want to at least go out swinging, so to speak. And so that's kind of what motivates a lot of the way I perceive things and a lot of things I do. But I don't feel like I've ever...
You don't self-flagellate when you go home at night?
No. And nor do I feel... Nor do I put a little medal on my chest whenever I think I've done something good. I do
both of those things in a very real and literal sense. I have a box of medals. I have something to flagellate with. We're at a time now, and I'm tired of your face, so...
Okay.
No, mostly I'm hungry. So, people, that's the show. We hope you enjoyed it. This podcast could be partially how we temper the dissonance.
Yeah.
I like to think we're doing something good with this.
Sure.
Are we helping you guys? If we are, tell us on the blog, themagicaltalkinghead.com. If we're not helping you, don't tell us, because that'll make us sad. No, you can tell us. Tell us. Also, like us on Facebook. Also, go to the Sun Cafe in Iowa City on First Avenue. Also, see The Force Awakens if you haven't yet. Just so you can stay in the social discussion. Because for the next couple of years, that's all the fuck anybody's going to talk about.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.